Isn't this a sports show?
I'm not calling for Alex Smith to get shipped out of town.
Almost entirely.
I will carry Alex Smith to the airport on my back, like a koala.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Excuse me. I'm talent. I'm talent, sir. Unhand me.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
I'm sorry, what were you saying the past 5 minutes or so?
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
Do I come across as thoroughly hateable as I toot my own horn on this Royals thing?
Well, I'm tooting your horn.
What?
Damn it.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Busy, busy, busy show today. As I accidentally turn on the volume and the TVs in the studio, starting it out absolutely perfectly. Lots to do here, lots to talk about, lots of things are happening right now. As always, you can watch the show on the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page or listen to it, you know, which is how it was made to be consumed. Anyway, Ezekiel Elliott is probably going to be suspended for the next six games. The Cowboys are currently in their bye week right now. And this is obviously a big national story because Ezekiel Elliott's probably one of the, 20 biggest stars in football? Ballpark. So not only is a big star finally facing the six-game suspension that was originally supposed to be the first 6 weeks of the season, but it went through some litigation, and the federal appeals court cleared the way for the NFL's six-game suspension. Someone described it as being essentially a legal false start. The NFLPA tried to take it to court too quickly, I suppose. I don't fully understand it. Regardless, it's a national story, but it's also very much a local story. The Cowboys are on a bye week. Then it's a six-game suspension. The Chiefs play the Cowboys in week 9. Which launches me into the next question that immediately came to mind. My first thought was, what week do the Chiefs play the Cowboys? I'm pretty sure it's the next six. Oh, it is. Then my next thought was, when does this stop? We haven't done, that's a win, that's a loss, that's a win. I think since the season started. And I had the Chiefs losing to the Patriots. I had the Chiefs losing at L.A. to the Chargers. I figured they would split with the Chargers. I think I had them 3-2 at this point. I had them losing, I think, at Oakland. I don't remember if I had them losing to the Steelers. It doesn't really matter. Here's the thing, though. You look at where the Chiefs are right now, and we have a lot. We genuinely have a lot to talk about today. I know it's confusing to hear me say that and then start the show with, that's a win, that's a loss, that's a win. There's a lot to talk about today. But I want to start here because this is the breaking thing. The Steelers are such a weaker team than we expected them to be. The Chiefs play them on Sunday. Then Thursday, the Chiefs go to Oakland to play the Raiders. Derek Carr is supposedly going to be back this week, I believe, in a game against the Chargers. Check that for me if you would, Beards. But even then, you've got Derek Carr with a sort of a tender back on a short week. And the Chiefs also have their own injury issues. Talk about that coming up in a minute as well. Justin Houston did not practice today. That's terrifying. This defense needs Justin Houston.
A couple, just from a quick Google search, it looks like there are a couple sources that think he will be back, or at least are hoping he will be back.
And it is the Chargers, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Ooh, do you know where that game is being played? If it's on the road or at home?
I will look.
All right. Oh, it's being played in Oakland because there's like an air quality warning that was out today. Because of the forest fires, I think.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay. Yes, it's in Oakland.
Yeah. And there may be a potential for the game getting moved, actually, if the air quality gets worse. Anyway. All of that is I digress. The Steelers look much, much worse than we expected them to. The Raiders are looking more fragile. It's still a short week on the road against a good team, but I don't think the Raiders... I think less of the Raiders now than I did 6 weeks ago. The Broncos at home on Monday Night Football is the next game. I always thought the Chiefs would win that game. Trevor Siemian on the road and Arrowhead at night, Monday Night Football. Okay, guys. Sure. Then at the Cowboys. That's a really difficult game. But the Cowboys currently have some locker room distractions. But more importantly, they're probably not going to have Ezekiel Elliott. Dak Prescott is really good. I am on board with Datrick Mahomes, as I like to call him. But this is a hugely winnable game on the road at Dallas. And the Chiefs have a bye. Then they go to the Giants, a team that might not have a win at that Week 11 matchup. Then it's the Bills at home, at the Jets, Raiders at home, Chargers at home, the Dolphins at home, who are terrible. By the time that they're playing on New Year's Eve at Denver, they might not need that game for the one seed in the AFC. Think about how completely bonkers that is. How many games that I just listed off are the Chiefs not going to be favored in? At Oakland, probably not at Dallas, not at Denver. So this is kind of insane. But at this point, the Chiefs going 12-4 would be a disappointment. It just would. And now, in fairness to my own bad preseason predictions, because I told you I thought they were going to win 10 games, and then you've got a couple of coin flips, and I'm a little bit of a pessimist, so I took the coin flip down. But 10-6 becomes 12-4 real quick whenever you beat the Patriots and the Chargers on the road. A couple games that I thought the Chiefs would drop early. But now 12-4 isn't good enough. Because the Steelers are not what we feared. The Raiders are not what we feared. The Cowboys and Giants are not what we feared. The hardest game on the schedule after from week 8 on is now the week 17 matchup against the Broncos in Denver. And that game is hugely winnable. The Chiefs are in an absolutely fascinating spot right now, where I can make an argument for them in every one of these games. And this isn't like a normal NFL thing where I can make an argument for them in every game, but I could also make an argument against them in every game. No. I don't. Realistically, I don't see how they lose at the Giants, against the Bills, at the Jets, Raiders at home, Chargers at home, Dolphins at home. None of those games. In fact, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to come up with a very good reason that they could lose to the Steelers at home this week. It's a little tease.
Part of it, you were just saying, you know, how some of these teams aren't what you feared. Also, the Chiefs are kind of better than we expected.
That's true. And that's largely true. I do still, I think it's more that other teams are disappointing me more than the Chiefs are, because the Chiefs are exceeding my expectations.
They've been thumping teams, too.
Right. The biggest thing is what Alex Smith has done. The fact that he looks like a more fearless quarterback. We're going to talk about him in a little bit. The idea that he is like an intrinsically different quarterback. Talk about that a little later on today. But I think that genuinely, I've talked about this before, the goalposts have moved in the NFL. The requirement to be a good team is pretty much at the same place. The requirement to be a great team is non-existent. No one's even in that conversation right now, except for the only undefeated team being the Chiefs. It's really interesting. And I look at the Chiefs' schedule now, and I say the Chiefs are a very good team. If you were to give me the great teams of the last decade, I don't think the Chiefs would hold up against those teams. I don't. I don't think that's terribly I don't think that's terribly controversial. I think the defense is really good. I think the offense is really good. But without Eric Berry defensively, with a still, I think, and that, God, someone's going to get mad at me for this, but still, I think, a not aggressive enough Alex Smith offensively, I think you've got two good units on either side of the football. And Alex Smith is getting better. I get it. All right? Shh. Calm down. But it's not using Tyreek Hill like Tom Brady would. Whatever. Anyway. And those are small criticisms, obviously. Saying this defense would be better with more Tyreek Hill deep shots. The offense would be better with more Tyreek Hill deep shots, and the defense would be better with Eric Berry and like a high ceiling D Ford. Yeah, those are only the most obvious statements in the world. But what the Chiefs actually have to do to go 14-2, 13-3, one seed in the AFC championship game, Super Bowl question mark? What the Chiefs have to do for those things, the requirements to get to those places are less than they were 6 weeks ago. And the Chiefs have obviously had their own detriments. You lose Eric Berry and you lose Chris Conley and you lose Ron DeVerde Tardy if you lose Mitch Morris for different varying lengths of time. All of that, obviously, every team deals with stuff like that. But, like, the Patriots' defense is way worse than I thought it was going to be. The Steelers' offense is worse than I thought it was going to be. Stuff like that. That's where this all moves, and I think it's fascinating. I think it's great for the Chiefs. The Chiefs are one of very few teams in the league who have, and I guess maybe Beards, this is sort of, maybe this is the middle ground here. The Chiefs are one of very, very few teams in the league who have surprised me in a good way this year. And I think the only team in the AFC, maybe the Jags, but I'm not scared of the Jags. I wish the Jaguars had Colin Kaepernick because I wish they had an actual quarterback. I say Colin Kaepernick specifically because he's available. But I think the Chiefs and the Jags defense are the only two things in the AFC that have surprised me in a positive way so far this year, off the top of my head. I haven't thought about that. I haven't gone team by team, but I think that's about it.
Maybe the Jets not being an absolute dumpster fire?
I hate the Jets.
That's true.
I hate the Jets. No,
they're their own category.
They are a dumpster fire still. They're a dumpster fire that's going to bleep around and win five games. There is nothing I was more confident about in the preseason than the under for the Jets getting 4.5 wins. I was confident in that, and I'm upset that the Jets are trying to ruin my run there. I still think there's a chance that happens, by the way. There's still
a
chance.
No, it's a very Jets thing to do.
There's a very Jets chance that they only win one or zero more games the rest of the season.
It is very likely.
But not really, especially, and I think I'm going to stick to my guns on that, of what surprised you in the AFC in a good way? Maybe Trevor Siemian being better at home than I expected. Maybe
yeah,
the Broncos
say,
have also been
yeah,
a little bit of a surprise.
Denver being competent.
Yeah, that's fair, I guess. But the Chiefs have been the most good surprising in the AFC. And there's been a lot. And the teams that are above them have been disappointing. Patriots, Steelers, etc. I've said this. I think I might have said this on Tuesday. The thing I was most wrong about in the preseason wasn't Alex Smith or Andy Reid or the offensive line, whatever. I think I was right about the offensive line. Doesn't matter. The thing I was most wrong about in the preseason, one of my like core assumptions about this year that I just got wrong, was that the AFC was decided already, that it was going to be a Steelers-Patriots AFC championship game, and there was nothing the Chiefs could do to deal with that. That was the driving force behind everything. Behind all of the conversations about would Patrick Mahomes benefit from starting this year, would the Chiefs long-term benefit from him starting this year, was that I was relatively content to say, all right, maybe Mahomes gives you a very slim chance of some postseason success. Alex Smith gives you virtually none, and regardless, the Chiefs have virtually no chance of postseason success because the Steelers and Patriots have this locked up. That was one of my kind of like core driving beliefs that I was using to take my action steps. And that was just wrong. And the Chiefs have a chance this week to capitalize on that with the Steelers. The whole NFL is doing it, and it's great for the Chiefs. It's fantastic. So that's kind of the news of the day right now, is Ezekiel Elliott's probably serving the 6-game suspension. He's probably going to miss the Chiefs game, and the Chiefs find themselves in a really good position in a really fragile NFL. And I know we've talked about that. I think one of the hours of the podcasts from Tuesday was like how the Chiefs can thrive in a fragile NFL. I know this is the same. I know we've been on this topic before, and there's still more new stuff today. Like 15 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, a new example of that fact being true came down the line. And they're going to play the Jets, or they're going to play the Giants without Odell Beckham.
No,
or any receivers.
The Jets by now.
Right, that's, yeah,
they've turned
call.
Into the Jets 2.0.
Good call. They're going to play Eli Manning in a bunch of mannequins in a game that I thought was going to be a challenge.
Yeah, I was a little worried about that one, just because the Giants are weird like that.
Yes! And Eli Manning and a bunch of really good receivers? Yeah, that's terrifying.
Yeah, they suck for, you know, however long, and it's like, oh, Super Bowl
yeah.
over Tom Brady.
Right.
Suck. Oh, Super Bowl.
That mythology stuck with me, and Odell Beckham sticks with me, man. Which makes me sad, by the way. I love Odell Beckham. I'm so sad that he's out for the season. But it just keeps happening. And so really, one of the most important things the Chiefs can do at this point is simply, like, stay on their feet. And they're going to win the AFC if they do that. Like, how bonkers is that? So they have a chance, obviously, on Sunday afternoon to capitalize on a version of Ben Roethlisberger that just looked washed last week. An offense that had nothing. A defense that cannot stop the run. And the number one pass defense in football that's played a bunch of completely like gutless quarterbacks.
So, just for curiosity, I was like, "What? I wonder what the second best record in the AFC is."
Yes,
everybody's 3-2.
Yes,
the entire AFC East is 3-2.
I think the Broncos are 3-1 because they had a bye last week.
Yeah, they're 3-1.
They're the only team in the AFC other than the Chiefs that doesn't have two losses.
The Steelers and Ravens are both 3-2. Jaguars are 3-2. Everybody else is either is just worse than that.
Watching Beards discover that was amazing, by the way. Because I looked up, and it was an amount of emotion from him that I rarely ever see.
I was, the Dolphins are 2-3, or 2-2. So not all of the AFC East is 3-2.
Right, but they already had their bye in week one, right. So they'll screw around and win against whoever they're playing this week. Because the NFL is wholly random, and none of this matters.
This is so weird.
But yes, it's so weird. Everybody is 3-2, with a couple artistic licenses. Well,
like, is there a second best team?
It's the Patriots. It's always the Patriots. And also, by the way, somebody put out their updated Super Bowl odds.
But there's nobody like really playing as the second best team, you could say.
I mean, the second best team, I guess, would be Denver. Like, I guess they have the second best like resume at this point. I guess in the AFC, I guess. But that barely counts. Blair Kirkhoff tweeted yesterday morning, I think, that Bovada had new Super Bowl odds. They had the Patriots at 9-2, the Packers at 5-1, and the Chiefs at 13-2, making them the third biggest favorite to win the Super Bowl. And I'm still not offended by that, because if the 16-0 Chiefs were playing a home game against the 8-8 wild card winning Patriots, the Patriots would probably be favored in Arrowhead, and I still probably wouldn't be mad about it. Like, could you really be like, no, out there, no! No! The Chiefs won 8 more regular season games than Tom Brady. Burr! Fast forward ahead to staring up at the scoreboard. Quadruple zeros, Patriots 34, Chiefs 14, and everyone's just sitting in Arrowhead despondent.
It's kind of like in the NBA, like last year, where LeBron was like the second seed.
Right.
And, you know, it's just every year, oh, LeBron doesn't need home court advantage. LeBron right. doesn't need home court advantage. Right. And he just destroys the Eastern Conference.
Yes.
It's kind of the same thing.
It's yes. It's, well, oh, man, are the Cavs in trouble? Are the Patriots in trouble? And there's the kick. Patriots versus Packers. The Super Bowl 52 continues next year on Fox. I don't know if it's Super Bowl 52. I don't know if it's on Fox. I don't know why they went to commercial break as soon as they kicked it off. I don't know why any of that happened that way.
They're trying something new this year.
Yeah. Here's to hoping that the thing that they're trying new this year is allowing the Chiefs to play in the game.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Like, you will accidentally find nudity on the internet. That happens, like, I don't know, once every three times they open a tab.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Weird shirt, lobster shorts.
Right, yes.
Space hoodie.
PacSun.com.
Naked body.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to the show. Quick Dak Prescott thing. With and without Ezekiel Elliott on the field since 2016, his completion percentage is 69.9% with Elliott, 58.3% without. He has about a yard shorter per attempt. His touchdown to interception ratio is worse. His passer rating is significantly worse. The Cowboys are worse. Breaking news, the Cowboys are significantly worse without Ezekiel Elliott.
Wasn't he an MVP candidate last year?
Yeah.
Or am I crazy?
No, I mean, I think he was. Eventually, it always goes to a quarterback, which is why, like, Alex Smith actually has a chance to be the MVP this year, because he plays quarterback and is on a good team. But he was, and
yeah,
he's
it's either
hugely important.
I think we did this on air. It was almost always quarterbacks and running backs that are
yes.
MVP.
And they won kicker. I got a new phone yesterday. It's the Essential. It's like one. It was like designed by like the original like designer of Android or whatever, and I like it so far. But for some reason, some of my contacts don't sync over, and that's really frustrating because I've gotten two different texts today. I did not have the contacts for. One of them I had to just text new phone who dis. The other one I realized I knew who it was because it had to be Beards. You texted me earlier asking for me to send you a description for the Facebook Live stream of the show.
Yep, that was me.
But it did not save you as a contact, and I don't know why.
Interesting.
I don't know why. A bunch of stuff transferred over fine. This did not. All right, so we've gone through the Ezekiel Elliott thing. I want to talk about Marcus Peters for a second. We're going to switch over and talk about a bunch of other stuff throughout the show today. But really quick on Marcus Peters, if you didn't catch it already, Therese Paylor had an article about Marcus Peters that came out a few days ago that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet. And I wanted to just point out a couple of excerpts because Marcus Peters is a hugely polarizing player in this market. And I don't want to say I don't know why. That's not true. I know exactly why. He sits for during the national anthem. He curses in his interviews. Not, like, frivolously, but just, like, it comes out. He's kind of quiet and reserved. He's from Oakland, and he cares about Oakland, and that's, I guess, controversial here. He's a controversial, maybe the most controversial person in Kansas City sports.
Wasn't there some stuff when he got drafted as well from, like, college?
Yeah, it was, like, I think there was some, like, behavioral things at Washington. I can't remember.
He was, I just pulled his page up. As a junior, he was suspended for one game. For a, quote, sideline tantrum.
Right.
He was later dismissed from the team and for disciplinary issues.
Right. So, and now, in fairness, that has literally never come up in any of the conversations that I've heard or been having about Marcus Peters. But that's in his past anyway. Here are a couple little things from Therese's article. And then a couple things that it made me think about. Trez writes, for all the incidents Peters has been involved with over his three-year career, post-play punts, unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, or in-game yapping at referees, Peters has consistently taken responsibility for his mistakes. He did so again on Friday when he admitted he shouldn't have cursed at that fan. Quote, I felt some type of way about what was said and I reacted, Peters said. I'm man enough to own up to all my bleeping mistakes. Or just as expletive, bleep mistakes. For me personally, whenever I get that from a player, I'm going to purposefully do the opposite of condemning that kind of honesty. And I know I'm in the minority on this, but I don't particularly value a person's ability to present sort of a sanitized front for the media or fans or whatever. Now, if you're just a jerk to fans who stop you in the street for a picture or whatever, I would roll my eyes at that and say, "Oh, it's no, I mean, just don't be a jerk." But if you're not being mean to people, I don't ever want to condemn anybody for being a genuine reflection of who they are. I'm not really. It's why, like today, I got here early today, and I was listening to all of the Chiefs audio that's come through the last couple of days. I listened to the entirety of Alex Smith's press conference, the entirety of Andy Reid's. I listened to Mike Tomlin's, all the players. We're going to play Chris Jones's audio in a minute. Later on, not in a minute, but later today. We're not going to play Alex Smith's. Because Alex Smith he's very good at putting a buttoned up front out there for the questions that are asked of him.
He speaks in quarterback speak?
Yes. And that's prevalent, man. Tom Brady is an amazing quarterback. He does pregame interviews before Monday Night Football on Westwood One.
And I've listened to those very often, and they are absolutely nothing happens.
Has he ever said anything in
any
of those?
No, never. Words have come out of his mouth. There has been no meaning to any word he has said.
I don't value that. I'm sorry. I don't. I care what Alex Smith said whenever he had that interview with Graham Beslinger or whatever, guy's name I keep forgetting. That interview that he did there was great. He was honest. He said he's playing with more of an I don't give a bleep. Yeah, I want that Alex Smith. I want him to say, yeah, man, I want Patrick Mahomes to sit on the bench for the next 3 years. All right, I'm in for that. But if your goal is to go into a press conference or whatever, or to be interviewed and just to give off the most sanitized version of your personality, I don't really want to hear that. I don't value that particularly. Some more from Therese. He talks about how Peters has been known to occasionally pop up at local schools. He had a surprise visit to high school in October and spoke to the football team. But he says also that Peters has always been very reserved about when he talked about these things. Therese says he's fiercely protective of his privacy, much like mentor and fellow Oakland native Marshawn Lynch, a running back with the Raiders. Quote, "What I do for the kids is what I do for the kids," Peters said. "I'm here to see the kids grow. I'm here to see these kids go somewhere and be able to have an opportunity, as everybody should in this world." When asked why helping kids is so important to him, Peters' eyes widen and his voice grows still more passionate. Quote, "Why shouldn't that be important to everybody?" He said, "No child should be able to walk outside and feel scared they're going to be treated different." The gap between the real Marcus Peters, the one teammates and family know, and his public persona may remain, however, because Peters has shown little interest in bridging it. He doesn't care about public perception. He's motivated by football, his family, and the city of Oakland. Trez continues here. "This is a good explanation for Peters' refusal to code switch or to alternate between two or more languages or varieties of language and conversation during interviews, and an indication of his inherent honesty. What you see is what you get 100% of the time." And I think that's something that should be appreciated, should be valued. Like, I hope I'm like that. I hope people listen to this show and then also talk to me outside of this show and go, "Oh yeah, that's obviously the same person." Because sometimes I catch myself on this show speaking more carefully than I would in my day-to-day interactions or whatever, and that bums me out. I would rather not be that way. Now, obviously, sometimes if there's something kind of weighty that we're talking about, I'm happy to have a calculated, thought-out way of articulating something. But I don't want to sound like a different person here than I do hanging out. And I've heard this happen, too. I've heard people talk on the radio and heard them talk in their normal interactions. And it bums me out whenever we separate those people. It bums me out to hear the difference between people on the radio or TV or whatever and the way they are in their day-to-day life. And I almost always prefer the person that they actually are than the sanitized version. And also, I know some people are going to say that something along the lines of, it's just part of the job, you got to be professional, put on your button-up shirt, don't curse in your interviews. And the question that I would ask for that is, why? Why is that the status quo? That's the status quo because it's about the comfort of the consumer, which means that you have the control in these situations. You have the ability to not be bothered by Marcus Peters being a genuine version of himself. And I think that if we, as a kind of a media landscape, had a little more forgiving tone with all of that, then we would get more honest players, more honest coaches, more real personalities. So that's where I'm at with Marcus Peters.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Whenever you're going to hit the button to mark something, just turn off your microphone first so we don't hear the actual click.
With Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back in to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City. 99.3 FM, 1510 AM when you're in Kansas City. If you're not, the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page or the Facebook live stream. You can stream the audio on 1510.com. You can stream the audio through the TuneIn app if you search ESPN 1510. I was telling Beards during the break. This isn't exactly how I phrase it, but this is the more concise way for me to be saying this. This show's better when I prepare more.
Duh?
Well, yeah, but like, there's definitely a sweet spot. This show will never be scripted. I hate the idea of having like, all right, now, at 4 o'clock, we're going to talk about this, and then at 4:10, we're going to talk about this, and at 4:20, we're going to talk about this, and then at 4:45, I hate that. But I just have like 1,000 things I want to talk about today, because we didn't have a show yesterday. And the last show we did on Tuesday was probably the most on the fly it's ever been, because we were prepared for a 30-minute show, ended up having a full 2 hours because of baseball, rain delay, whatever. So today's show just feels good. We're halfway through it right now, and I feel like we're about 25% of the way through the topics I had today. Like, we haven't even gotten here. Beards, I'm going to give you this little nugget that we're going to unpack. This is to keep you engaged for the next hour, Beards, because I treat you sometimes like a puppy. Like, here's a tweet. Here we go, puppy. Roger Goodell's wife has a fake Twitter account that she uses to defend her husband.
Oh, I saw the story.
We're going to get to that.
It's pretty funny.
Just not yet. A couple of things, Chief-wise here, an NFL thing. Travis Kelce was a full participant in practice today. Tyreek Hill has been added to the injury report. Justin Houston, I don't think practiced at all today. Mitch Morris came back. LDT didn't. Whatever. The Chiefs have a game on Sunday against the Steelers, then a game at Oakland on Thursday. They're going to have two games in, what, like 10 days? I guess less than that, really, if you think about it. They have two games in five, but like from right now. Anyway, they're going to have a game Sunday, then be off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, game on Thursday. It's a very concise turnaround there for a pretty beaten-up team. So be prepared to see a smaller dosage of Justin Houston somewhere, or of Travis Kelce somewhere, or some sort of just maddening usage or management of the injury report. Prepare to see that somewhere. I'm nervous about this stretch for the Chiefs.
Kelce, really quickly, ESPN just updated me. He's a full participant in Thursday's practice.
Did say that, but now we've said it twice.
Cool.
In two different voices. Thanks for listening. From the NFL, here's a statement from the NFL via Ian Rappaport. His Beards is just ashamed of himself. Good. You should be. I mean, like, go back during the next break and find when I said it, and then find when you said it, and then see how much time there was between whenever I said Kelce's a full participant in practice, and then you brought it back up. I'm going to say it was about 90 seconds apart.
I was doing other show work.
So
I was doing the other part of my job.
Sure. From the NFL, go ahead.
Never mind.
Okay. From the NFL, via Ian Rappaport here, basically it boils down to blah, blah, blah. As a result, Elliott's suspension will begin effective immediately. Elliott is eligible to return to the team on Friday, November 24th, following the Cowboys' Thursday, November 23rd game against the Los Angeles Chargers. There's still a chance that Elliott's team tries to scoot some things around and try to, I think, get it to New York, essentially. I don't know. According to Jason LaCanfora, the lawyer of Ezekiel Elliott, says the legal team is, quote, exploring all of our legal options and decide, quote, the best course, end quote, the next few days. So, it seems like we're not going to have to deal with Ezekiel Elliott in that Chiefs game. There's all of that. Also, now, there's a game tonight, there's a football game tonight, and we have Austin's Bar and Grill, like, sponsoring and supporting this show. And I thought, well, how could we welcome them any better than getting a really well-produced intro to the segment when we'll tell you what to go watch at Austin's Grill and Bar tonight.
Let's see what's on TV tonight out at Austin's Grill and Bar. Thursday is steak night at all three Austin's locations. So put down your TV guide and head to Austin's. Here's what to watch this evening.
Thank you, Curtis. Tonight, you can see this at Austin's. Philadelphia Eagles versus Carolina Panthers, Thursday Night Football. This is a real game that matters. Like, sometimes I'm sure it'll be like, oh, Thursday Night Football, you should go and get good food. And, you know, there's also football. Not tonight. Tonight's one of the best games of this week in the NFL. The Eagles, Carson Wentz, yada, yada, yada. 4-1, going on the road to a Panthers team that I think is clearly hitting their stride right now. Also 4-1, but they didn't look so hot towards the beginning of the year. Cam Newton's been on fire these last couple of weeks. Except for, you know. But both of these teams are in the conversation for the best in the NFC, and an NFC that has a lot of really talented teams. The Packers, the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Panthers, and the Falcons. I think, again, top of my head, feels like the five teams you got to keep an eye on in the NFC. Two of them squaring off here tonight in Thursday Night Football. Did you have something snarky to say, Beards? You look like you're about to say something snarky.
I did. Cam was hot on the field, just not on the mic.
That's true. And so where better to go watch this wonderful Thursday Night Football game than out at Austin's? They have three different locations, one in Gardner, two in Olathe, and Thursday is steak day at Austin's all day, as far as I'm aware. At all three locations. So go out to Austin's, thank them for supporting the show. In fact, I'm actually thinking you might catch me at one of the Austin's in Olathe tonight. That might happen.
Is this like a game of hide and seek or whatever?
Yeah, I'm going to wear my Where's Waldo
Where
white
in
and
the
red.
World is Joshua Briscoe?
Yes, 100%. I'm not going to Gardner because I got two in Olathe. I live in Olathe. There's one very, very close to me. I might just hop over to Austin tonight for this football game because I don't have cable. And I don't know if my parents' DirecTV online thing works for NFL Network. I'm excited for this game tonight, though. This is going to be very exciting. And I'm going with the Panthers, not just because they're at home, but because I think they have... Did I just start rapping to this beat? Did that just happen? And I'm going with the Panthers because I think they have superior talent at every position. Christian McCaffrey's had kind of a quiet rushing season, but he's the best running back on the field here. Jonathan Stewart also might be the second best running back, even though I do like LeGarrette Blount a lot. Kelvin Benjamin has had a couple of nice games. Finally got a touchdown, I think, last week. Very exciting game that you can catch on Thursday Night Football tonight. No better place to watch it than out at Austin's. Thank you to Austin's. Back over into the Chiefs realm. I think we're gonna have to read the internet, actually, Beards. I didn't think about, you know, back-to-back little segments without warning you. But Pro Football Focus put out an article that I thought had some very interesting nuggets in it. And it's written by Sam Monson. You can find that at ProFootballFocus.com. It's about Alex Smith's improvement in 2017. But the question that I have is, are we seeing a fundamentally different version of Alex Smith?
And now, Josh reads the internet.
Alex Smith has been reborn in 2017. The Kansas City Chiefs are 5-0 and the league's only undefeated team, and while much of that has been driven by rookie running back Kareem Hunt, Alex Smith has also been central to their improvement. His passer rating of 125.8 tells you all you need to know about the Chiefs' passing game efficiency this season. That's 20 points higher, better than his best single-season mark. Passer rating, though, is really a metric that looks at the passing game as a whole, not just the quarterback side of things, and it's possible for a passer rating to shoot through the roof without the quarterback necessarily playing dramatically better. This is emphatically not the case with Smith. He has it goes on here to say he has the second best Pro Football Focus grade among quarterbacks behind just Tom Brady. He's never had a grade higher than 10th over a season before this year. His passer rating under pressure is 135.7. And then here's this is a little snippet that I identified with. Smith has always been a capable quarterback, but he has had a fatal flaw to his game, so much so that I wrote a season ago that you couldn't win a Super Bowl with 2016 Alex Smith. I, parenthetically, 100% agree with that. The fatal flaw was a pathological conservative streak that made him too easy to defend and didn't punish defenses enough for taking risks in coverage. Alex Smith is always at the bottom end of the league in average depth of target and among the lowest in deep ball percentage. The 2017 version of Smith, though, has thrown caution to the wind far more, and that turns him into a completely different prospect for opposing defenses and greatly affects the outlook on the Chiefs. Smith aired out the ball on opening day, connecting a couple of long downfield passes with Tyreek Hill and Hunt out of the backfield. They're more a product of the scheme, busting players wide open down the field, and less a product of this new aggressive Smith. As reticent as Smith has always been to uncork the deep pass, even he has always been happy to put the ball in the air when he has as much open space to look at as he had on these passes. It goes through also and discusses how he's been more aggressive across the board this season. Simply being prepared to attack a defense over the top is a hugely critical aspect of quarterback play because it makes them respect all areas of the field and every type of route being run. Without that string in his bow in the past, Smith made things harder on the offense, but with it there in 2017, the Chiefs have been racking up points. Also, Smith's been really good accuracy-wise while going deep. We have seen a fundamental shift in Smith's disposition as a quarterback. In the past, he's been extremely reluctant to put the ball in the air deep unless he sees it wide open. If defensive backs were still in good position, he wouldn't give his receiver a chance by throwing the ball early, but that's changing this season. It concludes with, you couldn't win a Super Bowl with the 2016 version of Alex Smith, but you most certainly can with the 2017 version. As I've said over and over and over again, I don't care about his passer rating. I don't care about his efficiency. I don't really care about his touchdown and interception ratio. I care about that, as it was so beautifully phrased, that pathological conservative streak. That's where Alex Smith is problematic for a team that has Super Bowl aspirations and not just aspirations to beat teams that they're better than. And that's been different this year. I still have these large-scale concerns and questions about how a quarterback who's been in the league for a dozen years has a fundamental shift. I know that maybe the simplest explanation is that Patrick Mahomes is like pushing him behind him in the depth chart, but I don't really think that gives Alex Smith enough credit. I think that frames him as a guy who didn't actually like value his job before this, if that makes sense. Like, he wasn't really concerned about eventually being replaced in this league. I think he's smarter than that. I found all that very interesting. Also, I think I figured out my problem with aggressive, I told you so, Alex Smith guy. I think what I figured out, why that annoys me, is because there was virtually no good reason to believe that this Alex Smith would show up before you saw it here. Like, you saw this Alex Smith in the Colts game, and I think that's it before this season. The logical progression of Alex Smith was last year, but maybe with more trust and chemistry with Tyreek Hill. It would be like if you said before the draft, or even after Spencer Ware got hurt, oh, Kareem Hunt's going to lead the league in rushing. Kareem Hunt's going to be an MVP candidate. What? Why would you say that? I think he's going to be really good. He's going to be the best running back in football by a wide margin? Yeah. Why? Because he is. Because he's a Chief. I can't help but roll my eyes at that. That's the thing I think that aggravates me. I always believed in Alex Smith. Why? Why would you? What was so inspirational about the last several years of Alex in Kansas City that would make you think that he was going to be this season?
He wasn't Matt Cassel.
Well, and that's the thing. That's actually the answer. That's a good point.
That's kind of been my stance on all of this with Alex Smith. Like, we've talked about this before, about just the amount of angry Alex Smith calls we get during postgame the last few years.
Yeah.
And I was one always taking those. And just in my head, I'm like, do you remember how bad it was when it was Matt Cassel?
Well, no, but I think you're right. I think it is a lot of people saying, well, this was my frustration with Pat Mahomes in the preseason, those conversations. Saying, well, why would you settle for not Matt Cassel? Not Matt Cassel does not win you bleep.
Wins more than Matt Cassel.
It wins you regular season games. Not Matt Cassel wins you regular season games. But last year's Alex Smith wasn't going to win you postseason games. Plural. You know how I know that?
We watched it happen.
Alex Smith is lights out against the Texans. Woo! And that's not even really accurate. But that's what drove me so nuts. And so now we're seeing a different Alex Smith. I'm on board, man. I'm on board with him showing traits that he hasn't shown here ever. Again, that's where my frustration comes. I'm like, wait, what? You believed in this? Why? You thought this was going to be the year that he... It would be like if you said... It would be like if Alex Smith had literally sprouted wings against the Patriots. And now he was changing the game because he was throwing all these passes behind the line of scrimmage still, but like from like 15 feet in the air. Nobody could get to him. So he just hike, flaps his wings, he's up above the defense, and then just throws it to Tyreek Hill, just screaming on the sideline.
Why wouldn't you rush it every time?
Well, you mean wouldn't you just drop him in the coverage every time? Or why wouldn't you rush it every time?
Yeah, if he's got wings, why not just rush it?
That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, who can stop him?
It's a great point.
Nobody's got that reach.
I don't know.
Imagine, like, all the running backs or whatever jumping over people. Just, like, when they're away. Alex Smith's just swooping down from, like, the 10-yard line from the other side of the field.
That's good. But my larger point is, if Alex Smith had sprouted wings in week one, and then had been using those wings to hover above the defense on the way to his MVP season, I would still have four people in my mentions every time he threw a touchdown pass going, yeah, I told you so. I told you Alex Smith could win a Super Bowl. He sprouted wings! Well, yeah, I didn't... I told you he could win a Super Bowl. Why would you think that? Did you know he was going to sprout wings? Well, no, but I believe in Alex Smith. God! That's also why I have to stay off Twitter more. It's bad for my health. I feel like, though, I have now successfully figured out what bothers me so much about Alex Smith Twitter. And that's the thing. So I just believed he was going to sprout wings and be an MVP candidate this year. I just knew it. Did you not? Does Pat Mahomes have wings? I don't think so. All right, quick, before anybody notices, Jerry Jones is causing a distraction in his locker room, you guys. SB Nation headline, Jerry Jones' national anthem message took at least one Cowboys player by surprise. Jones said players who, quote, disrespect the flag won't play. A Cowboys player told ESPN's Josina Anderson, quote, now I don't know what to believe. The quote continues, I've never heard this tone from Jerry, ever. Goes against everything he told us in Arizona. Jerry told us to trust in him on this situation. Now I don't know what to believe. The whole kneel before the anthem was trash. All this talk about unity is finally gonna bite the NFL in the front. Oh, God. It's just, it's so. Jerry Jones wants to have everything every way, which I guess makes sense because he's Jerry Jones, and who's told him no throughout his entire life, I guess. But it's just not going to work, man.
Also, he can just throw money at everything.
That's also true. And this is something that I think Le Batard was pointing this out. Like, this is all of this, and now the ESPN, or ESPN, what? The NFL is having like a meeting with some players and some ownership and talk about like social activism month or whatever now.
Didn't they already do that? Or are they doing
no, that
are
was
they having
like
a second meeting?
That was like thrown out there. I think this is the first official meeting they're having. I don't know.
I thought it was Bennett and somebody else.
I think they were calling for one.
Oh, was that what it was?
Okay. I think so. But now they're having a meeting about it. I reserve my right to be wrong on that because it doesn't matter. But now they're having a meeting about it or whatever. And this is all of this is a direct result of the at least nominal leader of the country saying that the NFL should act away, and now the NFL's doing it. Jerry Jones is saying, stand for the anthem. The Dolphins had three guys stand in the tunnel last week instead of going out for the anthem. I think one other team was also involved in the owner saying, you're standing up. Trump did this. Donald Trump did this. This was over, man. This was over. Kaepernick was out of the league, and he was going to get thrown around in conversation still, but there were just a few guys taking knees, a few guys sitting here and there, and it was a very minimal story. And then Trump came out there with the SOBs, NFL responds, players respond, hashtag unity. Now Jerry Jones is picking a side again. And you know what really grinds my gears? Everybody I've ever interacted with on Twitter, most of my angst in my life, I guess, comes from Twitter. I guess I don't, my life's fine, like if that's true, I suppose. But everybody on Twitter, you want MSNBC reporters in your locker room with Colin Kaepernick as a quarterback? I don't blame NFL teams for not wanting CNN in their locker room. Too damn bad. Now Jerry Jones is doing it. Jerry Jones is bringing NBC, CNN, Fox, whatever. All they're in the locker room. They're covering the team. Donald Trump brought it over. Trump brought the news networks to the NFL. It's all here. There's no avoiding any of it. Ooh, do you have that Mike Tomlin sound? Mike Tomlin. And also, now NFL reporters. NFL reporters are doing this. NFL reporters are asking these questions because, of course, they should be. That's part of their job. This is the world we all live in. Mike Tomlin in his conference call yesterday with Chiefs reporters. This is the last question of the day and his answer to it.
You've had a pretty good unifying message as far as the protests that have been going on around the league and with your team. Next week, the commissioners bringing together to have this discussion about the protests and the national anthem. Do you have any thoughts on that? Do you want to see the league take a move like this?
I have thoughts, but none that I wish to share.
All right, we're all good here, Coach. Thank you.
Take care.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Coach.
Woo! I mean, I guess that's a good response. I guess if I was in Mike Tomlin's shoes, frankly, maybe that was what I would say also. If I was in Jason Garrett's shoes, it probably would be. Because you've got your boss right above you doing what Jerry Jones is doing. If someone asked Jason Garrett, and I was in Jason Garrett's shoes, and said, what do you think about this? I have thoughts. None that I'd like to share currently. Because I like my job. I get it. But you can't make this about too many TV cameras. And I also, by the way, I always have thought that the distraction thing is so overblown constantly. Like, what are two or three extra reporters in your locker room? The Chiefs got a couple extra reporters in their locker room on a daily basis, I'm sure, when they drafted Patrick Mahomes. Their training camp was very different than if they hadn't drafted a rookie quarterback. Ooh, distraction. Everything's fine. Tyreek Hill, drafting him, well, that's a distraction. Yeah, everything looks good there. Travis Kelce, Marcus Peters, distractions. Oh, well, they're 5-0. Oh, okay, well. Cam Newton's thing that he said. That's funny to hear a female talk about routes. That was a story. They're 4-1. They're playing at home tonight. Probably going to be 5-1 against a really good team. So I think your distraction things are largely overblown. But if you have a problem with distractions, now you also have to have a problem with Jerry Jones. All right, I think that's it for the anthem stuff today. Don't worry about it. Oh, no, Mike Ditka. Oh. You know that SpongeBob? You know that SpongeBob sound? I don't remember what episode it was or what the context was from, but there's an old fish standing like at a street corner, and a mob gets turned to him, and one of the fish yells, "How many times do I have to teach you this lesson, old man?" That's how I feel about Mike Ditka right now. All right, bleep it. Let's just do that now. We're going to get out of the way, and then we're going to talk about some other cool stuff that's going on in the world. Here, Mike Ditka was... This was before with Monday Night Football on Westwood One. He was talking to Jim Gray, and Jim Gray was asking him questions about all this. And the original clip was like 3, 4, 5 minutes. I cut it down to 90 seconds because I kept listening to it and going like, oh, yeah, okay, this is an old conservative white dude that believes a thing. That's fine. And so I just sort of just stampeding through it. And then this happened, and I thought, okay, well, now we have to play it.
And for those who want social justice and for those who look back at the lives of Muhammad Ali and Jesse Owens and John Carlos and Tommy Smith, your response would be?
I don't know what social injustices have been. Muhammad Ali rose to the top. Jesse Owens is one of the classiest individuals that ever lived. I mean, you can say, are you talking everything is based on color? I don't see it. I don't see it that way. I think that you have to be colorblind in this country. You got to look at a person for what he is and what he stands for and how he produces, not by the color of his skin. That has never had anything to do with anything. But all of a sudden, it's become a big deal now about oppression. There has been no oppression in the last 100 years that I know of. Now, maybe I'm not watching it as carefully as other people. I think the opportunity is there for everybody. Race, religion, creed, color, nationality. If you want to work, if you want to try, you want to put effort into yourself, I think you can accomplish anything. And we've watched that throughout our history of our country. People rise to the top, and they became very influential people in our country by doing the right things. I don't think burning the flag, I don't think protesting the country. It's not about the country. Right now, a lot of this is going on. They're protesting maybe an individual. That's wrong, too. Hey, you know, you got a ballot box. You got an election. That's where you protest. You elect the person you want to be in office. If you don't get that person in office, I think you respect the other one. That's all. Period. I don't think it can be anything else. That's only my opinion now.
Okay, we're good then. that last phrase is so important. Oh, bleep me. All right, oppression's trendy, I guess. It's cool to be oppressed or fight oppression. Can't think of any time in the last 100 years that there's been oppression in the country. Hold on really quick. I just a quick Google search. I'm going to when did
Martin Luther King Jr.
die. All right, he was killed. So he was killed in 1968.
Okay, hold on. How many years ago was 1968?
Working on it still. I'm going to get an exact number for you from howlongago.com. It appears that howlongago.com is not cooperating. White people love Martin Luther King Jr. as an example for things. So that was less than 100 years ago. I just wanted to point that out. Also, I thought it was interesting that he
49.
Said 49 years ago. Perfect. Thank you. I wanted to get the exact number of days, but it's not going to work on this site. Thank you, Beards. And like, you know, you can go to like a month ago and there's whatever, an unarmed black person killed by police. Fine. We're not, it's fine. We'll leave it off to the side for now. Anyway, I hadn't heard, because this is a conversation that I think is interesting that sometimes people ask, is, okay, so when are you cool with protests? Because that's kind of part of protest, is like it's you're never really going to be, protests are very rarely, rarely popular in the time, if it's for or against something big. But Ditka answered that. Ditka answered the question of when is it okay to protest? And his answer was by voting and essentially every 4 years, I guess every 2 years, kinda. So basically, as often as there are Olympics is how often you are allowed to protest. And also only by going into a voting booth and then clicking things and quietly shuffling away again. And I saw that he apologized for saying there has been no oppression for the last 100 years. All right, like that's, I guess if he is more like careful with his language because of all of this, then it was a positive interaction. One thing though that he said, and then I promise we're going to move on from this. We're going to move on from this. I promise. He said you have to be colorblind in this country. And you know the skin color of people have heard say that? Literally, I think only. Yeah, only have ever heard white people say that.
That's only my opinion, though.
Nice. Good work. Good work, Beards. But I think I've only heard, I think I've only ever heard white people say, well, I'm colorblind. Because minorities, like, can't afford to be. Because it doesn't work that way. And they don't get that treatment, actually. I'm white. I don't care if people go, oh, colorblind with me. Because, like, yeah, whatever, man. You see my paleness. I'm not at a higher risk to be unjustly escalated by a police officer at a routine traffic stop or something. I don't fear that. Anyway, you have to be colorblind in this country. I think at this point, just a little bit of social commentary, I don't think you can afford to be colorblind in this country. I think you have to, you cannot be colorblind in this country, because that's where the problems come from. If you treat everyone in the exact same way as they've all come from the same place or deal with the same things, and you're not dealing with the individual aspects of people. You wouldn't treat someone with rich parents as you would treat someone who's been homeless for years. Like, you know what I mean? This goes in 1,000 different directions, but I don't know. It's a small nugget of social commentary there.
That's only my opinion.
Damn it. Being colorblind doesn't actually help anybody. I mean, in an ideal situation it would, but we're not there. We are not in an ideal enough situation to just assume that everybody is not seeing race. There's also a really great comic. It's a little cartoon green scientist and a cartoon blue scientist, and they're working in a lab. And they both have these vials of like chemicals, and they're very happy, and they're working together. And they, one of them goes like, "All right, we finally done it. We finally created the potion that will make everybody, we have everyone the same skin color." The blue one says that. Green one goes, "Yeah, yes, this is going to break down so many walls in our society. It's a huge breakthrough." And the blue one says, yes, it's going to be so great when everyone is blue. And the green one goes, blue! And I think that's so, like, it's so insightful. Because, like, I would love to ask Mike Ditka. It's like, hey, listen, I know you're colorblind and everything. It's like, if we just made everybody black, is that cool? Like, including you? Like, would you, everybody? Or make everybody, like, Asian or whatever? Everybody Hawaiian? I feel like his answer to that would be some sort of clarifying question, which would be the answer.
That's only my opinion, though.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
But let's get excited about that 69. I mean, that's pretty good this time of year, isn't it?
With Joshua Briscoe.
Yeah. I know you're excited about the win, but how about that 69?
On ESPN Kansas City.
Beards found a local news weather segment that he was a real big fan of. So he made it into a liner. My favorite part of it, can you isolate the guy just saying, like, goodbye?
Let me look at it.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite part of that segment for sure. It's always kind of weird for me whenever Beards is visibly excited about something. Because he's not like a... Beards isn't like a sad person. He's just so weird with the things that he is interested by that it's always funny to find out what it is that excites him.
You want to just replay the whole thing again?
I guess. I want you to isolate the guy, though.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Okay, but let's get excited about that 69. I mean, that's pretty good this time of year, isn't it?
With Joshua Briscoe.
Yeah. I know you're excited about the win, but how about that 69?
Good night.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Good night. The good night is the what sold me on it. Stupendous. Oh, God. I've been sick for too long. I just coughed so hard that my throat hurt. Let's talk about Roger Goodell's wife. Wall Street Journal headline today that's just, I mean, it's just a perfect headline. Roger Goodell has a secret defender on Twitter. His wife. When media outlets wrote about the NFL commissioner, an anonymous tweeter hit back. When National Football League Commissioner Roger Goodell is under attack, as he so often is these days, @4Argument is there to fight back. Wait, who? The Twitter account is under the name Jones Smith. It has no followers, no profile picture, and has been virtually dormant for long periods since its creation in 2014. That is as much of the article as I can read because I'm not subscribed to the Wall Street Journal.
I feel like the name is kind of a giveaway, though. It's like, that's the user account you created. 4Argument.
Sure. Totally works. Makes sense that it's like a troll account. It specifically being Roger Goodell's wife is still pretty awesome. Also, the account has since been deleted.
I know, I was trying to look for it. There's a 4Argument too, though, now.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
I'll never see that one coming.
@4Argument is... Oh, God, see, I told you. @4Argument has roared to life in the past few months, rising up vigorously to vigorously defend Mr. Goodell against perceived attacks on his handling of issues such as the national anthem protests by players. That's not what it was. It's the millionth time. The most frequent sparring partner for @4Argument is the nation's sports media. I mean, at this point, Jane Goodell is going to be the president in 4 years. Like, this is just, it's perfect. She's just out here just, like, picking Twitter fights. I love it.
Now, here's the question, though. Yeah. Is it, like, actually her doing it? Like, this was her idea?
She doesn't have a person for this.
Or No. That's not my point.
Okay.
Was it her idea to do this, or just one day at home, Roger came home, he was really upset, and he was like, man, I don't have any public defenders on Twitter. And then he looks over, and his wife's just sitting there, and she's like, man, I just figured out this Twitter thing. And, she's looking at her Kindle, and she's like, you know, this is kind of cool. I think I might make an account. And just the light bulb goes off in his head, and he's like, hey, honey, I have a great idea.
First of all, I love that you had her tweeting from a Kindle. That's perfect.
I was going to say iPad, then I went,
nope,
no.
Mrs. Goodell tweeting from a Kindle is perfect. I think this was, I'm gonna say Roger definitely knew about it, for sure.
I mean, obviously.
But was it her idea? What a great question.
Yeah, was she either just like, you know, my husband gets beaten up too much by the media, I'm gonna defend him?
I think it was that.
Hey, I don't have any public supporters.
No.
Help.
I think it was her saying, be nice to Raj. I'm out here. I'm going to take to these Twitter streets. Also, apparently, like, Mrs. Goodell and the president and Kevin Durant all need, like, they're, like, first ballot Twitter Hall of Famers. Joel Embiid and Kevin Durant definitely are the first inductees of the sports. And Magic Johnson. There's your first inductee class of the sports at all basketball players. Interesting.
Poor Magic.
You're going to the Sprint Center game, right? When is that?
That is tomorrow.
I mean, how excited are you to see Joel Embiid's last game on good knees?
Please don't die. Please don't, like, explode both your knees.
God, it would be so sad. I would never let you live it down.
Oh, it would hurt so much.
I would blame you somehow.
It would hurt.
I'm excited for you to get to go to that. I'm going to probably go to a concert tomorrow night, but that's, you know.
Ooh, fun.
Different strokes. I'm very excited. I would like to see Joel Embiid, though. I kind of wish I was going to that. It sounds like a good time. All right, we went real, real long in the first segment, so we're going to take a break now, and whenever we come back, we're going to wrap up the show. Good job, boss.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I play enough fantasy football. I've been playing fantasy football for coming up on 10 years, which is completely bleeping bonkers.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I've barely been potty trained for 10 years.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Yeah, it's true. My 12th birthday was a big one for me. Finally got out of those pull-ups. Who am I kidding? You know I was a high-maintenance baby. I needed those cloth diapers. I got a sensitive rump.
Designer brand?
Oh, yeah. For sure. Like, different colored clothespins. I don't need silver clothespins. I want gold clothespins. Absolutely the case.
Actually, they're probably like either bright purple or yellow.
I like a nice variance. A couple days, yesterday I think it was. Yeah, yesterday I was very monochromatic in my fashion choices. I wore my DIY Kanye sweater that I've told you about that I haven't worn in yet because it's not cold enough today.
That one's kind of Kanye-ish with all the
holes
in it.
This had the holes in it when I bought it. But this is I'm wearing a nice, what is this color? Mauve? More nice mauve short sleeve hoodie. Very comfortable. Very Bill Belichick. Very high fashion. Hey, we haven't played Chris Jones yet. We got to do that. Today's been super weird. we had a show Tuesday that was going to be 30 minutes and ended up being 2 hours. And then no show Monday, no show yesterday, full show today, full show tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to do a ton of Chiefs-Steelers stuff. I'm going to explain why I think the Chiefs are going to win by a couple touchdowns. But Chris Jones spoke today to the media. Here's a little treat to get you into your Friday right.
How surprised were you that Ben throws 5 picks? Does Jacksonville look that much better, or is that just, is Ben maybe starting to come back down to earth a little bit?
Of course not. you know, Jacksonville playing successful against those guys, forcing him to create some turnovers, at a bad game. But we know he's going to come and fire on all cylinders this game, so, it's up to us to, make a difference.
That's your only playoff experience, obviously, is that one game against Pittsburgh last year. So do you in particular, I know some of these other guys have been in other games here and there, but for you, does it stand out more particular, the getting to play the Steelers again?
They beat us in my only playoff game, so that kind of excitement right there brings back memories.
tough team, very tough loss at that. So, you know, we're pretty excited about it here.
Talking about with Derrick Johnson about trying to stop Le'Veon Bell, he hasn't been off to the same start that he has been in previous years, but still, you know, what you've gotten to see in the playoff game and then just on tape, how hard is he to kind of stop is the kind of runner that he is?
He's a very patient runner. He's a dynamic back. He's very patient. Runs hard. You know, it's not about how you start, it's how you finish. And that guy, he's on a roll right now, so we just got to try to stop him and contain him.
Where are you now compared to where you were five games in last season?
It's a different mindset. I was getting, six or seven plays a game, five games last season, first five games. And now, you know, I'm more in the rotation on the starting lineup. So it's very different. You know, your mindset is different, you know.
Have you been on a team that's been off the same kind of start here? And it just seems to me with a 5-0 team, everyone seems kind of grounded.
How would you describe the mood around here, maybe, despite the fact that you're undefeated?
Yeah, nobody is really, you know, nobody is really bad on being undefeated. We just worry about our opponent and what we got to handle next, you know. We'll win a game, enjoy it at the moment, and next day we're back to work.
But when you get to take on teams like the Steelers that you might be competing for playoff seeding, too, I mean, that, when you take on the Patriots in week one, that's important, right? When you teams 3-2, they can easily win their division just the same. I mean, it's important to be able to put some distance between you and teams that you might be competing for that top spot, right?
Yeah, every game is important, man. We're in the NFL, so every game is very important. Every game is critical, so we look at all games the same.
All games matter. It's Chris Jones. Kind of a subdued Chris Jones. Makes me a little sad. I feel a little more subdued now. One thing, one good question in there that I really liked, at least I like the answer to, somebody asked him where he is now as opposed to where he was last season. Because again, I was telling you in the preseason that year two of Chris Jones is going to be another animal. And at this point last year, he said he was getting six or seven plays a game through the first five games. Now he's just sort of gotten into the starting lineup because he was working on coming back from his injury. Now he's in the rotation, but he's a rotation defensive end right now. And he's one of the most exciting defensive ends in the league. And 3-4 defensive ends, so, you know, kind of for some teams it'd be a tackle, whatever. But I continue to be very excited about Chris Jones. In case you missed it earlier, Ezekiel Elliott's suspension appears to be back on. The Cowboys have a bye this week, and then he would be out. I believe the number was until November 24th. That would put him after week 12. That makes sense. The important thing there, though, is that the Chiefs play the Cowboys in week 9. So even if Ezekiel Elliott's team, his legal team, not his football team, even if Ezekiel Elliott's legal team tries to have one more last gasp of trying to avoid the suspension, there's still a little bit more time for the Chiefs to hopefully avoid Ezekiel Elliott in that game. I'm starting to think now, though, that the loss that they took today would make them lean towards just trying to take the suspension now, get back for the end of the season, and hopefully back for the playoffs for the Cowboys. And I hope that's what they do, because as we were mentioning towards the beginning of the show today, The Chiefs have a fascinating path rest of the season. They're 5-0 right now, and I can't find three or four games that they won't be favored in for the rest of this season. Steelers game is huge on Sunday. It's a chance to get a little bit of revenge on a team that embarrassed you at home last year in the playoffs. You go to Oakland on a Thursday night game. It's always hard to win on the road on Thursday nights, but the Chiefs have a chance there against Oakland. Then it's the Broncos at home, at the Cowboys, potentially without Ezekiel Elliott, then a bye, then at the Giants, who have been decrepit this season. Then the Bills, at the Jets, Raiders at home, Chargers at home, Dolphins at home, at the Broncos. If there's no Ezekiel Elliott, the Chiefs are probably not going to be favored at Oakland next week, and probably not favored at Denver in week 17. Beyond that, especially if the Chiefs keep winning at this pace, if they take care of the Steelers and the Broncos when they go to Dallas, you're talking about a favorite at the top of the AFC. A team that has two more wins than anyone else in the conference. The Chiefs are in a phenomenal spot right now. Tomorrow we'll talk more Chiefs, Steelers, everything else going on. You've been listening to Almost Entirely Sports on ESPN Kansas City. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.